Welcome to the Arcade Age Podcast, episode 14, Don't Impede the Peed. The year is 1980. The Empire Strikes Back has just been released into cinema screens across the nation. The Miracle on Ice, where the United States defeated the Soviet Union to win the gold medal in men's hockey. Mount St. Helens erupted, and Ronald Reagan is elected President of the United States.
And the killer clown, John Wayne Gacy, is sentenced to death for the murder of 33 boys and young men.
Jesus Christ.
Perfect. Thank you for bringing the mood down, Seamus.
I thought you just said the insane clown posse.
No, the killer clown, John Wayne.
Go from Reagan to the killer clown.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, it's, you know.
Similarities.
Every high, there's a low.
I got to bring it down a notch, you know.
Oh,
and the Miracle on Ice.
I talked about that. I said that.
Yeah, you said it.
It's important, dude.
I know. Of course it's important.
Tremendous.
It's a great story. Movie Miracle.
It is.
Great movie.
Great movie. Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell, exactly. Fantastic movie.
Oh, did we talk about Rubik's Cube?
No, the Rubik's Cube
debuts in toy stores in 1980, May, I believe, of 1980.
Have you guys ever completed a Rubik's Cube yet?
Hell no.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Have you?
Really?
I could beat a Rubik's Cube in under a minute.
Dude, I know my friend's kid can literally do it in 4 seconds.
Like blindfolded?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Legit blindfolded, four seconds.
Yeah, well,
Every time he does it, I'm like, what in the hell is going on?
Yeah, no,
like, how can you
do
that?
It's crazy. Well, because...
It's all algorithms.
Yeah, it's
stuff,
way
yeah.
simpler than you'd think
yeah.
because it's a lot less thought and a lot more of, okay, like I'm in this stage of it. I just got
to
keep doing this algorithm
yeah.
and then I'll get to the next stage and do a different algorithm.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew a bunch of people in high school who got really into it and they were like learning
cubing.
All this stuff. Yeah, exactly.
I think you're a liar, Jake.
I'll bring in a Rubik's Cube
off.
Tomorrow.
You take the stickers off and then you place them on each box.
See, so the original Rubik's Cubes, I believe, had stickers on them. The modern Rubik's Cubes don't have stickers.
They're
they
actually colored blocks.
Yeah, they're painted in.
You mastered okay. the modern one. So
right.
I take that back. I'm a fool.
All right.
We'll continue.
Anyway, we're talking about Centipede, released June 6th, 1981. Now, Centipede is a fixed shooter. Played with a magnificent trackball, which, as we all know, I'm a huge fan of. Centipede is designed by Ed Logg of Asteroids fame and Donna Bailey. And it's credited as one of the first video games to attract women into the arcade. Bailey is credited with the design pieces that bring a lot of those elements to the game, and especially bringing women and girls into the arcade. Originally, she was a designer at General Motors before Atari, and she actually worked on designing the processor for the cruise control in the Cadillac Seville. So she joins 1980 and at that point is the only woman on staff at Atari's coin op division. Logg is credited with flushing out the main sort of programming elements of the game, and he said at one point that he did all of the self-testing, he did all the graphics. It came from an idea called Bug Shooter, which was Bailey's idea, but he was the one who also decided to put the mushrooms into the game and to use the trackball. So a lot of that stuff was his idea, and about half of the coding was his work as well.
Do you guys actually know like what your character is in Centipede?
You're just a bug shooter. I think you're just like a...
You're actually a gnome. I didn't know this, but
you're a gnome. No, in Millipede, you're an elf.
No, but yeah.
In Centipede,
you're
a gnome?
You're a gnome.
Really?
Yeah, you're a gnome.
So I have... I think I can speak to this because I recently bought an Atari 800, the computer.
Oof.
And what was that sound? Oof.
Oof. Atari 800.
What's wrong with the 800?
It's
a great computer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Plays Centipede fantastically.
Okay. Then if that's what you bought it for, fine.
That's what I bought it for. Exactly.
Go ahead. Tom Hanks and Big.
That's right. Exactly. but one of the games I got was Centipede, and it came like complete in box. The box is ridiculously large. It's like the size of like an LP record for
wow.
some reason. It's huge, even though the cartridge is like tiny. It's like it's smaller than a 2600 cartridge, but in the game manual, it has a story, which all of these Atari games had, and they just made it up for the games. But the story is that you're like some gardener or something like that. And you have like the little spray can and you're trying to get rid of all the bugs in your thing. So the little thing at the bottom is like your gardener holding a little spray can and you're firing like pesticides or whatever to get rid of the centipedes from your
Right.
Beautiful little garden.
Yeah. Sponsored by Roundup.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, I don't like the way that sounds. They're spraying pesticides everywhere. They're just destroying the environment.
Exactly. It's not an organic friendly.
They're not
garden.
Using like lemongrass as a natural pesticide.
I don't think so. No.
They're not poisoning the drinking
not
water.
Not in 1981. No.
No, they're using DEET or no DDT.
They're using DEET napalm.
I mean, close enough.
Napalm.
Some Agent Orange in the garden there. Please, more DDT, please.
Yes, but the whole point of the game, like you said, though, is that like you're a gardener or a gnome and you're taking care of all of the bugs that are getting into your field. And
right.
You don't want them to get below you or else they're going to take over your garden. So
right. And you have your little square trees all over the place.
Mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are mushrooms. The centipedes turn into mushrooms, of course, once you hit them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a very green game. It's a very, you know, earthy game.
Yes.
Down to earth.
I mean, the color's red, though.
You know what? You can't have everything, okay?
I mean, they could. That would have been an easy fix. Just like one code.
Just change it to green.
So instead of NARC having the FBI warning on this one, we are now going green with this game.
Right. Yeah. And it has the USDA.
Yes.
Or the Department of Agriculture warning.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, always spray pesticides.
Take care of your garden.
Right. Yes. Don't let the spiders take over your garden. That's another thing. You have bouncing spiders. You have scorpions. You have fleas. I always thought those were like rocks that drop down on
fleas.
You, but they're fleas.
Those are fleas?
They're giant.
They're fleas.
Interesting. They are giant.
They're bigger
really
than the
big.
Mushrooms.
Right. They are. They're bigger than your guy
they're
at the bottom.
They're bigger than the gnome.
Well, gnomes are small.
How do you know? I have a pretty decent sized gnome in my grandmother's garden. It's an islander gnome.
Is it really?
Yeah,
is he holding, holding the Stanley Cup?
Gnome.
Yeah.
Takes care of the garden while you're not watching
it. No, the
it.
Cup is his hat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a good idea to be a gnome in that game because, you know, while, you know, it's taking care of the garden while the humans aren't around, the gnome protects the fort.
It's Mimmel the elf.
It's the whole idea of owning a gnome. Yes. I don't know if you guys are aware of this or not.
Yeah, I know. It's supposed to protect the garden when you're not around.
Exactly.
Maybe that's why my garden always falls apart when I leave.
Buy a gnome.
I got to get a gnome.
For?
I'm getting a gnome. So Bailey's addition to this game is credited with the colors, which we mentioned earlier. So a lot of the game designers use bright colors at this point. It's a great way to attract attention, especially to the game. But Bailey goes a step further and uses these pastel colors. And they actually switch colors throughout the game. So stage one is that lime green centipede, green mushrooms, orange edges. The next one, you have a pink centipede, pink mushrooms, white edges. And I believe later on you get into blue, right, and purples and
yes.
stuff like that in the later stages. So it's all of these colors, and they all swap different stages, which even some of the later stuff like Pac-Man is pretty much all the same color palette throughout the levels, right? You know, so these
yep.
change, and all of the creatures change with it. The spiders turn blue and green and all of that stuff. So she once said that she really liked pastels, and she chose it just to kind of make it look different. And visually kind of catching. So many historians credit that with being responsible for attracting so many women and female players to the game.
Yeah, I think it ends up being something like 50% base players. 50% of the base of players for Centipede at that time are women, only rivaled by Miss Pac-Man at that time, which ends up being 60% of the base players are women of Miss Pac-Man, which is huge. At that time, there's no women really in arcades. It's a male-dominated subculture. And what Bailey does is she recognizes this. She's the only woman at Atari Coin-Op, like you mentioned, at that time. So she's in a man's world. She's dealing with a male-dominated subculture. And she wants to bring women into that. And that's exactly what Centipede does. And I think that the color palette is visually arresting. I still think to this day, for me, that game, and I started thinking about this as I was going over older podcasts. We were talking about, you know, Missile Command, and I had said that game is near perfect to me. Centipede and Millipede are near perfect to me as well. Mm. I will always go back to those games no matter what. And then I started thinking about like what, you know, Chris always says about loving trackball games, and I don't know, I guess maybe I have the same love for trackball games. It's just something so satisfying about using a trackball and one fire button and moving your cursor or your character over to line up to shoot the enemy, there's just like, I literally cannot get sick of that game.
It's perfect.
It's perfect.
You flow so perfectly with the trackball too in this game.
See, like, I just straight up disagree with all of you. I hate the trackball.
Yeah, you hate the trackball, dude.
I don't think that it's a good medium. I think a joystick is 10 times better.
You heathen.
But have you tried? It's okay to be wrong. I mean, you mentioned before that a lot of the games you were exposed to, they are trackball games, you're exposed to using a joystick on a plug and play. Have you used the arcades?
Yeah, no.
I still can't get into it.
No, I mean.
See, that fascinates me, like, because I'm like playing it on original hardware. It's just so dope. It's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way, I guess. Like I don't know. Missile Command's the main one that I'm so used to the joystick that the trackball ruins it for me. Like the cabinet.
That's a crime.
Yes,
it's a crime.
Sure.
Chris, what do you think about that?
No, here's the thing, because I have a similar thing. My dad had a 2600. We would always play Missile Command on it, and I remember like one of the first couple times I played it in the arcade, I was like, oh. This is so much better. I was like, this is how you're supposed to play it.
Gotcha.
And it was like a little kid, and I'm like, this is like the only way to play it.
It makes you feel like you're in like an actual defense
system. Exactly. You've got that big trackball. That's the thing. Centipede, the only problem is it's the trackball smaller, which I understand, but you know.
The only way to make the game better is if the trackball's larger.
Yes, I want
like a bowling ball-sized trackball.
Yes, which Missile Command has.
See, yeah, if it was like a bowling ball sized trackpad where you got the whole hand going, right?
Right.
Instead of just kind of, you know, where you're just using the tips of your fingers, maybe I'd get around it. But
interesting.
I don't know.
I've seen some guys do this as of late in restoration process, which I was kind of very purist about at the beginning, but now when I see it, I'm kind of like, it's kind of pretty cool, where they take out the old black trackball and they put that like light up red one on a Centipede one, machine. Yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah.
I was very purist about it at first, and before I saw it, I was like, that's, you know, don't do that. You know, you're molesting the, you know, original scope of the game and what it's supposed to look like, whatever. But then I saw it firsthand. I was like, oh, wow. That
first time you see it light up.
Dope. Yeah. And it's got the Volcano 1 and 2 player buttons.
Okay.
They light up, right? And then you have this light up glowing red trackball. It's pretty sweet.
That would probably look cool in Missile Command, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sick.
Red lights in the back, you know?
Since we're still in the early 80s here of Centipede, did you know they made a board game of it? I feel like...
Yeah.
Do we have the board game in our collection?
We have the Zaxxon board game. At that time, I feel like they made a board game...
Out of everything.
And out of every arcade game that was kind of... Getting pumped out.
There's,
and that started with Pac-Man,
because
Pac-Man became such a brand to attach to everything. Keychains, like I've said before on previous podcasts, bicycles, cereals, cartoons. We'll get into later into other games that went just as crazy in terms of branding that IP onto everything, like Pac-Man did. But Centipede and Millipede and Pong, Zaxxon, they all had kind of like step off IP branding things, you know?
Interesting thing about the game, the board game, is you could either play it as the centipede or the gnome.
Okay.
So one player would play as a gnome to defend the garden, the other one would be playing as a centipede to attack the garden.
Yeah, that was a common thing, because I remember my dad has the $6 Million Man and Knight Rider board game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Terrible games. We played them like twice. But he has them from when he was a kid. So I think that was just a thing back then, that every popular thing got a board game.
Yeah.
Although Knight Rider never really got many video games. There's like one
on the NES. That's about it.
Which is, I think I have it.
There's a little interesting story that involves Centipede. So when we talk about the golden age of arcades, I always kind of say it's like 79 to like 81, 82. You know, there is, you know, debate amongst many historians and many people in the arcade culture, when is the first death of the arcade? And that's always debatable. But you're seeing cracks in Atari's fabric. As early as 1981, you're starting to see their problems in their home console division and in their coin-op division. So
when does the 5200 come out?
I want to say 82.
Okay.
I want to say 82. Could have been later. But also, that's four. It's also technically kind of like 3 or 4 years too late, because before Bushnell was forced out of Atari, he had been talking about releasing another console, the 5200, mm-hmm. whatever, redesigned console, as early as 1978.
Okay.
He'd already been talking about it.
Oh,
so,
really? Okay.
But so, interesting little story that involves Centipede. On October 28th, 1981, Tournament Games, which is this tournament company that were running billiards tournaments and darts tournaments at the time, they're hosting a national video game championship at the Chicago Expo Center. They bill it as this massive 10,000 person competition for one game, Centipede. They end up getting about 150 people to compete, because those competitors were expected to pay their transportation, their lodging, and a $60 registration fee. That's a lot of money for teenagers who are the arcade goers and the arcade players to pay for anything at that point in time. So only about 150 people sign up. And of course,
it's staying in.
I mean, we are an arcade age podcast. I don't think people will mind arcade sounds.
Some arcade sound effects.
So they get about 150 people to sign up. And of course, they're allowed to practice on the 250 Centipede cabinets that are set up in the Expo Center. So imagine it's the Expo Center's got 250 Centipede cabinets. You sign up for this competition, you're obviously allowed to practice and do practice rounds. The catch is that none of these 250 cabinets are set to free play. So the competitor is expected to pay the quarter to play their practice rounds for the game. On top of that, the game is set, whatever tournament settings are on it at the time, all 250 machines cut off after 3 minutes of playing.
Oh.
So you're kind of like screwing the competitors, you know, you're screwing them over for registration fees. You're expecting them to transport themselves and lodge themselves, and then they're paying 25 cents to play the game for 3 minutes. The winner of the tournament, this guy named Eric Gunner, receives a check for $12,000. O.K. Su Han, one of the few women out of only a dozen women who entered the competition, won $4,000 as best female player. Both of those checks bounce.
Oh, no.
Nice.
Both of those checks are bounce. They bounce.
Oh.
Right? Oh. So Atari later ends up having to cover the checks in order to avoid the obviously crazy, awful public relations nightmare. But you see it, like you start to see the cracks and the flaws in Atari and in arcades itself. And I do say a lot in this podcast, like, that it's not a flash in the pan. What I'm referring to, it's not a flash in the pan, is video gaming as a whole, not the arcade itself. Because the arcade does end up kind of sort of being a flash in the pan in American popular culture. Video gaming has never been a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
So that's when I refer to it's not a flash in the pan, I'm referring to video gaming as a whole. Centipede is one of the highest grossing games of 1982. It's up there with Ms. Pac-Man and Donkey Kong. And it's one of, as we said before, it's one of the first coin-op arcade video games to really bring women into the arcade. So follow this up a year later, November 12th, 1982. Is the awesome sequel Millipede.
Before we get into the sequel.
Yes.
Do you know what the high score is for Centipede?
The high score record? Yeah. I do not know.
Jim Schneider broke it, and it's been held since in August 1st, 1984. Earned a score of 16,389,547. And what if you look up a picture of him, it's crazy because like the arcade cab's right behind him and everything's a mushroom. So I know, like, anyone listening to this podcast, if you have no visuals, you can't really see it. But if you look up Jim Schneider, everything on the screen is a mushroom.
Was he in a gas station in Florida for 16 hours when he set this record?
30 hours.
Just 30 hours. Excuse me.
Now, that I actually can't find. Okay. I'm sure I could look it up, though, if you're interested.
So Millipede is the sequel, released to the arcades on November 12th, 1982. It's a sequel to Centipede. It has some differences. It has some improvements. You're no longer just this generic kind of bug blaster. Instead, you play as a character called the Archer. The Millipede now moves faster, The head part of the millipede is harder to shoot. You now have earwigs, which replace scorpions. And they make the mushrooms poisonous so that when the millipede hits them, it kind of goes insane and it'll charge towards the bottom of the screen. You have bees replacing the fleas. And then again, they leave mushrooms and take two shots to destroy. Ladybugs turn mushrooms into indestructible flowers. Dragonflies drop mushrooms while zigzagging downward. You also have DDT bombs, like bug bombs, that blow up when shot, killing all the enemies and the mushrooms within the cloud. Now, you just brought up the centipede world record. We're trying to figure out which gas station in Florida that was set at.
Mm-hmm.
The millipede world record is 10,627,331 points by Donald Hayes in December 2004. Pretty recent.
Oh.
Yeah, I think he's out of New Hampshire, that guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So recent for, you know, such an old arcade game.
New Englander.
There
you go. Just chilling and banging on his millipede machine.
Playing millipede.
Our millipede machine, our cocktail, my cocktail, was actually the second game that I received and that I purchased for my own personal collection.
Hmm.
First one I had was Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Second one was the millipede cocktail. And I got it for a song. Because I went down to this guy's house, I believe in Rockville Center, to pick it up. And he plugs it in, and it's not working. It's playing blind. So at that time, I have no clue what the hell's wrong with it. So I wiggle him down the price a little bit. I say, all right, get it upstairs with me, get it on my truck. And I brought it back here. And I was working on it up in the shop hangar that we have on campus here, and the only thing I had to do was I took the, you know, popped the glass up. I literally took the monitor out, unharnessed it, put it back in, plugged it back in, put it back in, closed the glass, plugged it in, and the thing comes up and works. And it was like this absolute thing of beauty, you know, for a cocktail table game. It really is. I've got a real affinity, a real love for that game in particular. And I've got a real love for that game on the cocktail. I don't like cocktail table games unless they're trackballs.
Hmm.
I do not care for the Pac-Man.
The little joystick.
Tabletops. Yeah. I think they suck. I don't. I do not like Donkey Kong tabletops. We have a Popeye tabletop, really? Which is, it's a great game, but I would prefer it if it was a stand-up.
Yeah,
stand up normal size Nintendo
a tricky
cap
game too.
Yeah, I understand
right.
that.
But it's just that little joystick thing. But the trackball works
well
because
you're not dealing with those weird angles. Like the joysticks are always at weird angles, or your hand can't really get over them because you have the glass. Yeah, no, I understand that. Yeah, I actually really like the cocktail tables, and it's although one of the things is that they all look the same. They're very uniform.
I find them to be quite uniform. Yeah.
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 But the material is different. Kind of like our millipede, though, the cocktail, it's like wood grain on the sides, right?
Yeah, but a lot
they
of them
all
were.
Kind of have that.
Well, yeah. A lot of them, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see, Donkey Kong have that. Our Popeye has that.
Oh,
yeah.
Popeye has a wood grain.
I think
too?
We have an Asteroids Deluxe the same way.
I didn't know that.
We I think the millipede one is a little bit narrower and taller.
Yeah.
Than the rest of them.
Mm. Yeah.
Some of them do feel small,
but
though,
that's about it.
There.
I mean, you can also adjust the legs on it to bring it down too on the millipede.
Right.
On a lot of the cocktail tables, you had like the pins that you can then push in and bring the legs down or bring the legs up in order to either shorten it or lengthen it.
Now that's also a two-player millipede.
Yeah. Machine.
Right. Which is super dope.
Did they release
the screen
a two-player stand-up?
Yeah.
What?
I think they were all two-player alternating.
Yeah.
Like you know, you bump, but right. That's the dope thing about that cocktail because you're sitting across from the other player, and when it's their turn, the screen flips to them.
Right.
And you're watching from above, looking down on them playing their game. And that's what I really find appealing about that particular game in a cocktail table. And something about that monitor they have in there is completely bomber. Like, I've had a little bit of problems with it, fixed it real quick. But it's always been bright. It's always been beautiful. And, of course, the colors are very similar to the color scheme in Centipede. So it's these bright, vibrant colors. And that game, as well as Centipede, just draws you in just in the attract mode, right, it just draws me to it.
Well, the other thing is the sound is actually really good. It's very simple.
Yep.
But it has that little, like when the centipede's walking, it has that little music that plays.
Yep.
You and on the cocktail too, it sounds great.
Right, exactly. Oh. I mean, that's the thing, like our centipede machine set up in our shop upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Our exhibit is put away for the time being, but we have it in storage and, you know, we can turn it on if we have to or if we want to. But that centipede machine is so loud.
It is.
You almost can't play it.
Yeah, I got the volume jacked up on that. I'm going to have to do something about that. I
might have to lower that.
Yeah.
Because you're just hearing... Doo, 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 doo,
yeah.
it's like blasting in your eardrums.
Oh, I miss it.
And another thing about like the design... Now, I do have a Millipede cabinet that's completely empty and gutted down in storage as well that I've always wanted to make a full stand-up Millipede. But we go and we talk a lot about side art and artwork. Dude, the side art for Centipede is just like absolutely stunning. Yeah. It's absolutely gorgeous. This giant, like demonic looking centipede there. Super bright, beautiful.
It's that bright, it's like neon green and then the white on the back and stuff. Yeah, it's a really good looking cabinet.
Yeah, it's an amazing looking cabinet. That side art is just huge. And just, it's really kind of just evil looking.
Yeah, it does look very evil looking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It really does.
Especially for the game, because the game isn't like, you know, it's not a demonic centipede. It's just trying to eat your mushrooms or whatever.
No. And centipede is the,
I know.
Got that nice white trackball on it.
He's just hungry.
Yeah, but it depends how much you like your garden. It is a little demonic.
That's true, but he's just hungry.
Don't touch my peppers.
Also matters if you've eaten those mushrooms first.
This is true. Yeah, maybe that's the story.
Yeah.
Ate too many of the mushrooms in the garden. The centipede starts chasing him.
Speaking about sequels, though, going from Pac-Man to Ms. Pac-Man, you move a little bit faster, but the gaming difficulty is generally the same. Here, though, from Centipede to Millipede, I think you can make the argument that Millipede does feel a little bit more difficult than Centipede.
I think it's harder.
Right.
Yeah, well, because I think that the Millipede moves faster, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's Ms. Pac-Man. I guess they did speed up the ghosts and stuff, but...
I mean, I don't know. Ms. Pac-Man is, like, 10 times easier than normal Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because Ms. Pac-Man moves, like, fucking crazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of prefer that. I prefer the faster pace for Pac-Man, but
with
Millipede and Centipede, I mean, what do you think, Seamus? Do you think that Millipede's a little bit more difficult than Centipede?
Speed? I find it more difficult than Centipede. I definitely do.
I wonder if it's because you have to get more, like, not precision shots, but you have to, like, kind of aim a little bit better in Centipede. Like, there's no aiming at Pac-Man.
I mean, you don't have to lead it drastically, but there's a little bit of leading where you have to be a little bit more strategic.
And there's no aiming in Pac-Man, right? Yeah. So moving faster isn't that much of a challenge. In Millipede, you have to aim at something that's moving faster, and you're moving faster.
Yes, exactly.
In Millipede,
you see the design... difference, the industrial design difference. Now again, the bright, vibrant side art on Millipede with the arch at the bottom and then the Millipede like going up above him as this like intimidating monster. Bright, beautiful colors. But with Millipede cabinets too, there's a front first of all, the speakers are set up above the glass, above the bezel. And they're facing out instead of facing down on most arcade cabinets. They're facing out, and there's this beautiful, like, speaker grill there. And then there's the marquee that lights up, which is really, really kind of interesting. So it's a little bit bigger looking of a cabinet. And also what adds to the size look of the cabinet is that you see this, that's not in Centipede, that is in Millipede, this beautiful front kick plate art. So the front below bottom of the cabinet is covered in this gorgeous artwork that is obviously, you know, details from the game, artist rendition details from the game. And it's like super, super cool looking. It's actually really beautiful when you go to, which also, of course, makes it a little bit more of an expense to restore a Millipede than it is a Centipede, because if you get the proper cabinet for a Millipede, and you want to get all the restoration art properly, obviously with that giant kick plate graphic, you're talking, that's an added expense. You're talking a difference of a $200 or $300 graphics package for a centipede to a $400 or $500 package for a millipede because of the added graphics for attraction on the front of that cabinet.
Yeah.
All right, that wraps up our episode on this week's episode of the Arcade Age podcast, Millipede and Centipede, two of my favorite games.
Two of my favorite games.
Just classic arcade Atari trackball action.
It's the cocktail.
The cocktail.
I think I think they're both the epitome of golden age games, though. I really think they are.
I don't
going back again and talking about what I like to play and what I don't like to play. I don't go after Ms. Pac-Man or Asteroids or Space Invaders to play all the time in terms of like, oh, I really want to play a great old school game when we have the exhibit out. I literally go right for Centipede. When we have that up and out there, I go right for Centipede, I go right for Millipede, and I go right for Missile Command. And there's several others as we get into it that I'll definitely mention that I go to all the time. But those three, it's got to be something about the trackball.
Trackball. Well, that brings us to our next episode, probably, that we're going to record after this, most likely, is Trackball Heaven. So please stay tuned for that if you enjoyed our discussion of trackballs. We'll get even more into the perfect control scheme for arcades, the perfect control scheme for any video game. Every console should have a trackball. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.
Thank you for tuning in to the Arcade Age Exhibit Podcast. I hope you enjoyed your time with our hosts, Seamus, Zach, Jake, Sean, Chris, and Jose. Tune in next week, and remember, the future is now.